Welcome to Catholic Connection with Teresa Tomeo, keeping you connected to your faith and your world. Teresa tackles the issues of faith and culture, the pro-life message, and media awareness. And now, here's Teresa Tomeo.
And it's a Wednesday. It's October 29, 2025. Great to be with you on a Wednesday. Hope it's going well for you. It's beautiful here in central Italy, so beautiful that this morning when Deacon Dom and I were doing our readings outside, I just started crying because it's just so pretty, and I just kept thanking God for making Italy. Anyhow, speaking of Italy, we'll be discussing that a little bit later on the program. We are going to be talking about Italy Shrines and Wonders Wednesday, and I'm going to explain to you what I'll be doing next week. I'm so excited. We are going to be taping a brand new series, Saints in Italy, and this will be all about St. Francis, because next year it is going to be the 800th anniversary of the passing of this great saint, the founder of the Franciscan Order, and of course such a much-loved saint and one of the patrons of Italy. And we are going all over Umbria. Actually, we could go all over Italy and all over Europe and other parts of the world, because he was a great, greatly traveled saint. You know, he went all the way to the Middle East and went to the Holy Land, and when he came back from the Holy Land, he actually developed the first nativity set based on what he saw in the Holy Land and how he was moved by, of course, the birth of Christ and being in the town of Bethlehem and also Jerusalem. So there's a lot to discuss. We'll give you more detail at the bottom of the hour. Of course, Joan Lewis is back with us. I'm very excited because I haven't talked to her in a couple of weeks because we were on pilgrimage, first with Wine and Shrine, and then, of course, our La Dolce Fide pilgrimage. And then after that, I believe Vanessa was filling in for me because we were still traveling about and around Italy. But it's going to be a great discussion audience today. And of course, all the big news about the weekend coming up, which will be involving a new doctor of the church, Cardinal Newman. That is going to be so exciting. So we'll discuss that with Joan. Much to talk about this morning on a Wednesday morning edition of Catholic Connection. Don't want to tease the second hour too much because we'll get ahead of ourselves, but I do want to mention that there is a very interesting survey that came out from our friends at the Susan B. Anthony List, and they're talking about how people, despite what the culture and the media are trying to tell us, people are very concerned about the safety or lack thereof when it comes to the abortion pills. So it's very, I think, encouraging that people want more information. And so we'll discuss that in the second part of our program this morning. Still monitoring the situation in Jamaica, trying to get information on what happened. It was clobbered by Hurricane Melissa. Now Melissa is moving on to Cuba, which is very frightening as well. So we'll give you an update on that in the news and the weather. But that's a look at what is going on in the program today here on Catholic Connection, CC with TT here on EWTN. All right, let's take a look at the weather for you as promised and see what's happening. National Weather Service is saying breezy offshore winds and very dry conditions will continue to promote hot temperatures and critical fire weather in coastal Southern California. And that will be taking place through this evening, so for the rest of Wednesday for that part of the country. And then we're talking about critical fire weather conditions are forecast for much of the southern part of Texas. And this is because, apparently, of gusty winds and how humidity is persisting there. And then we still have widespread rain showers and gusty winds expected to shift from the Mississippi Valley to the northeastern part of the country. So that is a look at the forecast. And as we mentioned, we also have an update for you on Hurricane Melissa. And we're still in hurricane season. Don't forget, it doesn't end until, I believe, if my memory serves me correctly, November. It is a Wednesday morning. Great to be with you here on EWTN. Let's get started with the news on a Wednesday and see what's happening. Natural sound of Hurricane Melissa moving back into the Caribbean after pummeling Jamaica. It was the most powerful hurricane on record to strike the island, landing as a catastrophic Category 5 storm and packing winds of 185 miles per hour. Life-threatening flooding and storm surge impacting the island nation now, Jamaican officials say. Well over 500,000 people are without power. Meanwhile, the hurricane is now taking aim, as we mentioned earlier, at Cuba. The latest information from the National Hurricane Center showing that monster storm has now weakened to a Category 3 with maximum sustained winds of 125 miles per hour. It's still very dangerous, though, with winds increasing across Cuba as Melissa looks to make landfall sometime this morning. As much as 20 inches of rain are expected in parts of eastern Cuba, bringing the risk of catastrophic flash flooding and landslides there as well. Mark Mayfield tells us House Republicans are asking for the Justice Department to launch an investigation now into the use of the auto pen by the Biden administration.
In a report released on Tuesday, the GOP-led House Oversight Committee said despite past presidents using auto pens, former President Biden was cognitively impaired, and his staff took advantage with a laissez-faire approach. Chair James Comer asked the Department of Health's Board of Medicine to investigate Biden's doctor. The report labeled any action as void if there's no evidence that Biden himself took executive action. The report doesn't name a singular incident that the auto pen was used without Biden's authorization. I'm Mark Mayfield.
A judge in New York ruling that a pro-life group can engage in sidewalk counseling within 15 feet of abortion facilities and not be in violation of an earlier court order. This according to the Christian Post, which is saying that U.S. District Judge Kenneth Karas, ruling from the bench on Monday that Red Rose Rescue could protest or offer counseling in close proximity to abortion clinics, rejecting a previous request by New York's Attorney General Letitia James to ban the pro-life group's activities. The Thomas More Society, which is helping to represent Red Rose Rescue, releasing a statement saying that they're celebrating the bench's ruling that allows a pro-life group to demonstrate. The evidence they provided, they say, in defense of Red Rose Rescue clearly demonstrates there was no violation of the injunction, including the body cam footage showing that every claim of misconduct made by the Attorney General's two partisan witnesses was demonstrably false. And a new report highlights which states have laws and policies on the books that are friendliest and most hostile to faith-based nonprofits. The Napa Legal Institute releasing its 2025 Faith and Freedom Index earlier this week, the report ranking each state on a scale of 0 to 100 based on its protections for religious nonprofit organizations. The overall score, based on a state's religious freedom score and its regulatory freedom score, senior counsel and Napa Legal Institute director of content, Frank DeVito, saying the index is a powerful tool for lawmakers to see where they must add protections, strengthen existing state laws, or repeal harmful state laws. A state religious freedom score is determined by several factors, and they include the presence of or absence of state constitutional protection of free exercise, whether the state has passed a Religious Freedom Restoration Act, religious freedom conditions for nonprofits with public programming, religious freedom conditions for faith-based employers, protections for religious exercise during a state emergency, and state Blaine amendments. Now, the states that ranked lowest in the religious freedom category were Michigan at 22%, Vermont 23%, Delaware 25%, Washington State 26%, and Maryland 27%. President Trump says the U.S. is the top country in the world.
Because we should have the lowest interest rates of any country, because without us, there are no other countries, really. I mean, the whole thing falls apart.
Trump speaking at the Asia-Pacific Economic Cooperation CEO Summit in South Korea, saying the U.S. economy has improved dramatically since last year. The president also touting his administration's efforts to create American jobs, expand AI infrastructure, and bring down inflation. Trump, the president's multi-day trip to Asia will also include a high-stakes sit-down with the Chinese president, where he's expected to push for a new trade deal with China. And the Federal Reserve is widely expected to cut interest rates today, the Fed kicking off its two-day meeting in Washington. Yesterday, the group has indicated it will announce a cut following a string of poor labor reports, coupled with news that inflation has slowed. The Fed is expected to approve a second consecutive quarter percentage point for 2025, the cut has a trickle-down effect on consumers, lowering mortgage, credit card, and auto insurance interest rates. Transportation Secretary Sean Duffy visiting LaGuardia Airport yesterday, talking about the impact of the government shutdown with air traffic controllers missing their first full paycheck. Secretary Duffy says this is the beginning of a painful time for the air traffic controllers.
They do really important work for our country, and they need to show up. But I'm not going to lie to anybody to not say that they're not feeling the stress. And this is day one, and day two gets harder, day three is harder after that as expenses continue to roll.
The controllers are required to work without pay as a government shutdown continues. They had been receiving partial paychecks at this point. Duffy says it remains safe to fly, and it's staffing, even as staffing levels drop. And he says will also lead to delays, though, and some possible flight cancellations, but it's still relatively safe. Vice President J.D. Vance is indicating that troops will be paid during the government shutdown, at least for now. Vance telling reporters after a Senate Republican policy lunch that over 1 million military service members will get paid at the end of this week, and he continued to blame Democrats for the shutdown. Pentagon officials have identified $8 billion in unspent research, development, and technology funds to redirect to pay for troops. But some lawmakers have questioned the president's legal authority to redirect those funds. Treasury Secretary Scott Bessent also warning that unobligated funding would run out by the time troops are due to receive their November 15th paychecks. Meanwhile, Vice President J.D. Vance is taking part in a Turning Point USA tour down south. He'll be in Oxford, Mississippi today, where he will deliver remarks at the University of Mississippi. Vance was a close friend of Turning Point USA founder Charlie Kirk, who was assassinated at a speaking event in September. Vance will also appear alongside Erica Kirk, the late conservative activist wife and the new CEO of Turning Point USA. And a health expert at the Cleveland Clinic, as Tammy Trujillo tells us, is now emphasizing the negative health impact of too much phone scrolling.
Dr. Adam Borland, a psychologist, says what's known as doom scrolling can fuel stress, anxiety, and even disrupt sleep. He says to avoid this, set screen time limits. He suggests starting with realistic goals and using an alarm to signal when your screen time is up. He says once the alarm goes off, do something more positive for mental health, like going for a walk or doing a hobby. I'm Tammy Trujillo.
A new study showing about 4 in 10 U.S. adults admit to driving while drowsy to the point where they say it impacts their ability to stay safe on the roads. The study was done by the American Academy of Sleep Medicine. AAA estimates about 1 in 6 deadly crashes involves a drowsy driver. Experts also warn that could be just as dangerous as driving while intoxicated. Experts say to avoid the risk of driving drowsy, try not to drive for long stretches alone, pull over and take a nap, and switch drivers on longer road trips. And speaking of drivers, inconsistent laws meant to protect emergency response crews, according to Rory O'Neill in a new report, are confusing American drivers.
When drivers see emergency vehicles on the side of the road, they're supposed to slow down and move over. A AAA Foundation report finds about a third of drivers ignore the law, and most aren't sure of exactly what their state law says. Penalties range from $30 to $2,500, and enforcement of the slow down and move over law is uneven at best. 46 emergency responders, police, fire, EMT, and tow truck drivers were killed on highways last year. I'm Rory O'Neill.
And the U.S. Postal Service says it's prepared for the holiday shopping or shipping rush. I should say shopping and shipping rush this year, because many people have to ship after they shop. The agency has recently invested close to $20 billion to improve logistics and processing. Roughly 14,000 seasonal employees are being hired to handle the increase in cards, letters, and packages. U.S. residents have roughly 7 weeks before the first United States Postal Service mailing and shipping deadline on December 17th for first-class mail. I cannot believe we're talking about Christmas shopping already. That's unbelievable. I can't believe this weekend is All Saints Day, All Hallows Eve on Friday. My goodness, time flies. Let's give you another look at the weather before we take a quick break. It is almost 13 minutes past the hour. We'll keep a close eye on the developments, of course, also with Hurricane Melissa. The National Weather Service again telling us breezy offshore winds and very dry conditions continuing to promote hot temperatures and critical fire weather in coastal Southern California. And that's going to stick with the California residents until this evening. And then we have critical fire weather conditions forecast for parts of Texas. And then we have some heavy rains and winds that are going to be moving from Mississippi to the northeastern part of the country. It is a Wednesday. It is October 29th. We're glad you're listening to EWTN. And as we say in radio, don't touch that dial. We'll be right back. From Sinai to Rome, Jewish identity in the Catholic Church, from our friends at Ignatius Press. Beautiful cover with the Star of David and the cross in the middle. On the phone with us is Gavin DaCosta. He teaches in Rome at the Angelicum. We were just exchanging notes and discussions about beautiful Bella Italia. Gavin, great to have you on with us this morning. And tell us about this book and your interest in this topic in terms of Jewish identity in the Catholic Church. How did it all begin for you?
Right. Well, it's great to be here. Thanks for asking me. And it began because I'd been involved for many years in conversations between Catholics and Jews. And slowly, as time went on, I began to realize that the whole acceptance of Jewish identity as being something that is part of God's plan meant that Catholics who were Jewish in background began to come to the surface much more. And I think this is true for the church's own consciousness. So that in a strange way, it came from a conversation with the Jewish people and then realizing actually the Jewish people are also intrinsic to the nature of the church. Hence, we call the book Jewish Identity in the Catholic Church.
Could the identity, though, also be for those of us who are born Christian, raised Christian, but understand the Jewish roots of our faith? Could that also be why you named the book that title? Because I think it's very appropriate in both circumstances.
Yeah, so I co-edited the book with Angela Costley, who is in fact a Jewish Catholic, and I am a Gentile Catholic. And in a way, I think having that combination was important in keeping an eye to what is the relevance of this to Gentile Catholics like myself, and what is it and how is it relevant to those with a Jewish background. And certainly for me, it's been a recovery of the sense of the early church being, you know, as St. Paul says, part of a Jewish root into which the Gentiles were grafted. And in that sense, you know, we need to think perhaps that this was a Jewish messianic group that actually went universal and brought in Gentiles who were grafted into Israel. Now, for Jews, this is also the ability to recognize one doesn't have to lose Jewish identity if one is a Christian. This isn't a kind of missionizing process, but it is actually the recognition that you can be fully Jewish and fully Catholic in the way that Jesus was. And this is central in Nostra Aetate.
Tell us about some of the contributors, because it's quite an impressive list.
Yeah, we were very fortunate because it suddenly was clear that this is a kind of topic that's central to the whole New Testament. So we have people like Scott Hahn and Brandt Pitra, who I'm sure like your listeners know. And these are people who are working in the New Testament field who are recovering the sense of how do we read the New Testament answer. We recognize it's part of a kind of Jewish plot. That here's a Jewish group, we can understand Mary and the context of Christ's temple, for example, in John. Scott Hahn's brilliant essay on that, and Brandt's excellent essay on the Jewish roots of Jesus and Mary. And what's very eye-opening then is that every time you open the New Testament, it's really saying you can't understand it without the Old, but also the Old is part of the Jewish tradition. Then we've got a number of people looking at the Catholic tradition, Bruce Marshall and Robert Sestighi, and both are in the U.S. And Bruce writes on Aquinas, and Robert is looking at the Council of Florence and Benedict the 14th. And what's important about this central section of the book is it's trying to say the tradition is often understood as rejecting Jewishness. And this is a revisiting of tradition to understand half why that was going on and actually how it can be read in a much more positive light. And then the final section is looking at the church in the modern world. And that's kind of a number of contributors, Roy Schumann, Antoine Levy, David Newhouse, Lawrence Feingold. So, again, if people don't know the names, they reflect the fact that these are Catholics working in very, very different geographic areas. And the last section of the book is trying to pull together the argument of why this is important, what it shows us about the nature of the church. And my own contribution there is to argue that the Catholic Church is at the moment coming to a point where the fullness of the church, the recognition of the fullness of the church, is recognizing the church as both Gentile and Jewish. And that's the kind of blessing. It adds to the fullness of how we understand ourselves.
I totally agree. Yep, beautiful. From Sinai to Rome, Jewish Identity in the Catholic Church, we're talking with Gavin DaCosta. Roy Schumann, his story is amazing, his conversion story. I've interviewed him many times. What is his contribution about?
So he's looking at the question of Jewish identity, and he's got a wonderful chapter and typically called Two Jews, Three Opinions. And Roy is kind of trying to map out different ways of Jewish existence in the church, some which say, look, you know, I was never a religious Jew, I don't have that much connection with it, and I'm okay. And on the other side, people who are saying, ethnically I'm Jewish, religiously I'm Jewish, and I feel that kind of identity continues. I mean, a great example would be Cardinal Lustiger in Paris, who was buried with Jewish Kaddish rites before being wheeled into Notre Dame Cathedral for the High Mass. So what Roy is doing is kind of providing a map for people to see how this kind of phenomena is working out in the modern period.
There's so much to learn here, I think, too. And also, if you look at some of the great saints, including the doctor of the church, St. Teresa of Avila, she had a Jewish grandmother, I believe, if my memory serves me correctly.
Yeah.
And of course, then we have, you know, St. Teresa Benedicta of the Cross, who was a Jewish convert. But if you read the Old Testament, it's my husband actually came back to the church by studying the Old Testament and growing up as an altar boy in the Catholic Church and reading the Old Testament and seeing all the different things that he would notice, right, when they were prepping for Mass, seeing that in the Old Testament. So to deny the Jewish history of the faith is just denying reality, I think.
Yeah, that's a very important recognition. And of course, someone like Edith Stein had always felt that her Jewishness was part of her identity, a modern-day saint who is actually taken away by the Nazis and murdered because of, one, the Catholic Church speaking out against Jewish persecution in Holland, but two, and this is important, she was a Jewish convert, so she was, if you like, picked up first. And that's a kind of testimony, really, in a remarkable way. One other essay, I should say, is by Antoine Levy, and you can tell by the name, this is a person of Jewish background who is a Dominican Catholic. And in a way, he looks at the question of contemporary Israel and the presence of Jews there.
Fantastic book, From Sinai to Rome, Jewish Identity in the Catholic Church. So one last question, have about a minute left, Gavin. For whom did you write the book? For all Catholics to understand the connection with Judaism and the faith, or for whom? Was there a group in particular you were thinking of?
Yeah, I mean, I think it would be saying the person in the pew who just goes to Mass and loves their faith, this is a book that will help them open eyes to something even deeper and more precious at the center of our faith. I think it will also be something that makes them more alert to the Jewish presence in the world, in so much as there is, of course, you know, Jews who are not Catholics, rabbinic Jews, Israel's in the news, and all of these things are actually connected. I mean, Pope after Pope has been talking about the fact that we are spiritually Semites. So it's meant for people who love the church, want to know about her nature and discover Jesus, Mary, and that early pulsing heart in a more intimate way, but to recognize it affects the way we pray, the way we act, and the way, most importantly, the liturgy operates today.
Absolutely. Well said.
Yeah.
Gavin, great to talk to you. Thank you so much. From Sinai to Rome, Jewish Identity in the Catholic Church. And the book is from our friends at Ignatius Press. In addition to our guest, other great contributors include Scott Hahn, Roy Schumann, and Dr. Robert Fastigi from Sacred Heart Major Seminary in southeastern Michigan. We'll be right back on a Wednesday. Stay tuned.
Okay, thanks so much.
Thank you. Da-da-da-da-da. I love this bumper music. Welcome back. Shrines and Wonders Wednesday, based on my book, Italy's Shrines and Wonders, which I'm proud to say is a bestseller, Catholic bestseller, very, very popular. You can find it, of course, at the EWTN Religious Catalog, EWTN.com. So very excited. After the show today, I do have a conference call with the wonderful people of EWTN's Mission Advancement Team. This is such a great area of our ministry, Mission Advancement, and you will find so many wonderful things that they're offering in terms of special online series from a number of EWTN contributors and personalities, including yours truly. Of course, earlier this year, we put out the wonderful Saints in Italy series, and you can get to that still. It's up and running, and I think we have close to 10,000 people who've gone online and looked at it. And it's a great little mini study that you can do. And we look at not just St. Francis, but we look at many of the saints across Umbria. And I think you'll really enjoy it. You can still find it, ewtn.com/saints in Italy. So this is the Jubilee year, and we're wrapping up the Jubilee year, obviously, on the Feast of the Epiphany. But there's another big event taking place here in Italy in 2026. Now, 2024, for example, marked 800 years past the date of St. Francis receiving the stigmata in Tuscany on a beautiful mountain known as Laverna. There's a whole retreat center and a chapel there built around it. So there was a big celebration here, which EWTN covered, by the way. Our Rome Bureau. Big celebration in Italy last year. This year, the Jubilee year. Next year is going to be the 800th anniversary of the death of St. Francis. And so the guides are telling us that it's going to be very, very busy again. It's not going to slow down at all. And Italy is off the charts in terms of tourism now, busier than it ever was. And as I mentioned, I think I mentioned this yesterday, there really is no downtime anymore to travel to Italy. So you have to make sure that you're prepared for the crowds, and you pack a lot of patience. But I'm very excited about this series because we are really concentrating on towns. In addition to Assisi, we're going off the beaten path. We are going to, I would say, beyond Assisi. I think we might even call the series that. We'll decide, and I'll let you know. We have, again, a meeting this afternoon. But we're going to be going to different places in Assisi with which you may not be familiar. You may have heard of the beautiful church in St. Mary d'Angeli, the town that is named after the church, which is basically Lower Assisi. Before you get up the mountain, you see this huge church. And St. Mary d'Angeli is, St. Mary of d'Angeli is where they have the Porciuncola, the little portion church. It was very important in the ministry of St. Francis and where he had a center of his ministry when he first got started and where St. Clare met him and where that whole meeting took place. Also, it's where he did pass away. He was carried into a little area of their center, and he was looking up at Assisi, the town of Assisi, when he died. We're also going to be going up to the hermitage on the top of the mountain of Subasio. That's the main mountain of Assisi, is Subasio. And so we're going to be meeting the monks there, I believe, on Monday afternoon. They're going to kind of walk us through. It's beautiful up there. If you've never been, again, it's one of those places that a lot of people don't have time to visit because many people take, let's say, a day trip from Rome or a day trip from Florence, which is very doable. But sometimes when you don't stay overnight in an area, you miss so much. So we want to kind of take you beyond Assisi in the life of St. Francis. Now, in addition to Assisi, we're also going to be going to the beautiful town of Spoleto. So if you're looking at a map of Umbria, which is in the center of Italy, the green heart, the center of Italy, you look at Assisi and then you go a little bit southeast. It's about, I'd say, 40 minutes from Assisi. It's extremely important, not only in the life of St. Francis and his ministry, but it's also important in terms of history with the Romans and the Umbrians and the Etruscans. I mean, there's so much history in this area. And there's actually a Roman amphitheater that you can visit and an incredible archaeological museum with all kinds of amazing collections from different time periods, including the Iron Age. I mean, it's crazy the history in this one little town. So we are going to be going there as well. And what's so important about Spoleto? Well, two important factors. First of all, this is where St. Francis was struck down with an illness after he decided that he was going to go off and join the papal army and be a hero. And this is in the very, very early stages of his conversion. So he goes to Spoleto, stops in Spoleto, and gets very ill, and he has to turn around. And so he turns around and goes back to Assisi. And as I've mentioned before, in one of our segments in the Saints of Italy series was all about this particular statue, my favorite, which is in front of the upper level of the Basilica of St. Francis in Assisi. It's called the Return of St. Francis. He's sitting in full armor on a horse that is also decked out, you know, with the whole armor on as well. Both of them have their heads bowed toward the church. It looks like that he's surrendering or that he's giving up. It looks more, if you look at it, you think he might be depressed. But what he's really doing is surrendering to God because he feels like, well, I failed at this. Now what? What do I do? So it was a significant time in his life. But also in Spoleto is something very, very important. And that is one of the few handwritten letters we have of St. Francis. It's kept in a reliquary there in the Duomo. So we're going to have the opportunity, God willing, if everything goes well with the shoot, to get inside the church and to take a close-up look at this letter and just to be there where this happened. It was written to Brother Leo, one of his Franciscans with whom he was very close. So that's an amazing town, Spoleto. And Deacon Dom and I are actually going to go there this weekend. It's about an hour from our little place in central Italy. And in true Italian style, in addition to the history, of course, and the beauty, it always has to be food, right, and fellowship. So they're having what they call a Dolce Festival. Dolce means sweet in Italian. And the whole town is going to have booth after booth of different sweets popular in the region of Umbria. And they're also going to be previewing some holiday treats as well. So I'll take a lot of pictures and I'll post on Facebook and whatnot. But I need to go back and take some photos of the church and also of the reliquary and just really the town itself to kind of give you a sense of where St. Francis was in his lifetime. So we'll be in Assisi for the shoot. We'll be in Spoleto. We're also going to my favorite town in all of Umbria next to our little village, and that is the town of Gubbio and the famous story of the Wolf of Gubbio. There are actually two churches associated with this story. There is a church called St. Francis della Pace, San Francesco della Pace, St. Francis of the Peace, in the town, and you actually go down and you see this little tomb there. And it has an image of a wolf on it, and it is said to contain the bones of a very large wolf. And there's also some other things indicating the story of St. Francis and the wolf. But there's also a beautiful little church, Santa Maria Vittoria, outside the city walls, where that meeting, that famous meeting between Francis and the wolf, actually occurred. And that is just lovely. Went there the other day, took pictures inside, and just amazing. They have this statue of the wolf, basically humbling himself before St. Francis. It's just incredible, the footprint that St. Francis has, not only on Umbria, but all of Italy, going to Tuscany and Liverna, going all the way down to the Mount of St. Michael in Puglia. He didn't go in the cave of St. Michael because he didn't think of himself as worthy. So he was in Gubbio. Of course, he was in Assisi. He was in Spoleto. He was in Florence. He was in Rome. Went down to Rome to get permission for his order to begin. And there's a beautiful statue of St. Francis in front of St. John Lateran with his arms stretched, and behind him are several of his Franciscan brothers. And that's when he went down to seek the permission to begin the Franciscans from the Pope at the time. And it was in front again of St. John Lateran, because at that particular period, the Pope was living at St. John Lateran, which is the home of the Rome bishop. So much to talk about with St. Francis, but asking for your prayers as we get ready to organize to do our next Saints of Italy series, this one all about St. Francis, as we move into 2026, marking 800 years of the passing of this great saint. We'll be right back. Great to catch up with Joan Lewis. It's been a while. Of course, she's been on. I've been all over the place with two back-to-back pilgrimages and other travels. But Joni, I don't even know where to begin, so I'm going to let you give us an overview because there's so much to discuss with the Holy Father's schedule and all the great news coming out of Rome. Good morning. Great to have you back on the program.
Well, it is great to be back. And again, another amazing week for the Holy Father. The audience is, if you just look at the schedule that, like, we get every day, we in the media from the press office, there's something like 8 audiences every day.
8.
In the sense of individuals,
wow.
Maybe a small group, larger groups, the general audience, things like that. Of course, he gives a talk. But he's met heads of state, heads of government, royalty. Just this week, the Belgian king and queen, he's been meeting with a whole bunch of Vatican nuncios. Today, one of his audiences was with Archbishop Gomez of Los Angeles, the list is so huge. And they'll list all the individuals, then they'll go general audience or some big event. Sunday, the Holy Father said 2 masses. It was the Jubilee Mass in the morning of synodal teams and participatory bodies, unusual title. And then in the afternoon, he ordained a Polish Monsignor, an Archbishop. And this was a Monsignor that he had previously appointed as the papal nuncio to Iraq. Then on Monday, the Vatican released the program of the papal trip to Turkey and Lebanon late November. Then there was a mass with pontificals, with students from pontifical universities. And Tuesday, I don't know how the Holy Father did it. We came, the Vatican published, but so far only in Italian, an apostolic letter called Drawing New Maps of Hope. And this was on the occasion of the 60th anniversary of Vatican Council II Declaration, Gravissimum Educationis. And, of course, we're hearing a lot these days about 60th anniversaries because Vatican Council II ended in 1965. So documents that came out at that time, obviously we're looking at a 60-year anniversary. And so Tuesday there was that document. And then Tuesday afternoon, kind of like late afternoon, there was an international meeting for peace, religions, and cultures in dialogue, which was organized by the Rome-based Santa Gedeo community. And so Pope Leo joined the leaders there at the Colosseum on Tuesday, and this was a meeting for prayer for peace. And powerful words said by the Pope then, and if we have time, I'll go back to some of these for papal quotes, but had very powerful words against war, against war, of course, the instrumentalization of religion. And then later, speaking of religion, in the Paul VI Hall last evening, Nostra Aetate, Walking Together in Hope, a 60-year anniversary. Now, this was Nostra Aetate, the Second Vatican Council Declaration on the Relation of the Church to Non-Christian Religions. Now, most of it, of course, focused on the relations with the Jews. And then, in today's general audience, again, given the importance of Vatican Council II and the importance of Nostra Aetate, the Holy Father's general audience catechesis was delivered on that topic. And it was fascinating because, you know, we've had such gorgeous weather, rain a couple days ago, but the audiences have been held outside in the square. And today it was very, very colorful because so many of the religious leaders from around the world, the different faiths that had been with the Pope at the Colosseum, and then were all at the meeting last night with the different religions, and then today at the general audience, and of course the Holy Father commented on their presence, and he said, "I express my gratitude for the presence of leaders and representatives of non-Christian religions. May God, who created all men and women, pour into our hearts a spirit of fraternal love that we may recognize the imprint of God's goodness and beauty in every human being." So, just so many busy days. Oh, and then, of course, this weekend, I'm sure you've mentioned it at least once, but this weekend we have the Mass on Saturday presided over by the Pope, in which Cardinal John Henry Newman will be declared a doctor of the Church.
Yep.
Well, and he's also been, I think he's going to be named co-patron of education, along with Aquinas. Yeah. So that was announced, I think, just yesterday when Thomas Aquinas. So he and St. John Henry Newman will be co-patrons of the Church's educational mission. And the number of people, as I mentioned to you before we went on air, Teresa, there were so many people. I'm going to be interviewing the president of the Newman University in Kansas. And she told me in an email just as she was about to, she's at the airport leaving to come to Rome. And she said, "We just got a note from the Vatican that the event scheduled to be in St. Peter's Basilica with the Pope on Saturday has moved outside to St. Peter's Square, given the huge number of requests for participation." So anybody can go if you're in Rome on Saturday and you don't need a ticket. You can go to St. Peter's Square and attend the papal mass that will name Cardinal Newman as a doctor.
If you can get in. I mean, it's so crowded. We had some of our pilgrims, and you know this better than anybody because you live there, but we had some of our pilgrims go in early before our pilgrimage began. The pilgrimage began on Thursday. the, was it the 15th, I believe. And so they went in early so they could get to the Wednesday audience. And they said it was all the way down, Joan, down the Via della Conciliazione.
Oh, that, and then one day, I think it might have been a Saturday one, I was having a early lunch. I was at Home Baked, which is on the street I live on, Porta Cavalieri. Mm-hmm. And all across the street, all along the Vatican walls, for more than two blocks, people were lined up to get into security. So if they even got there on time, they would have only had a few minutes. That's the sad part, you know. But and the thing is, it's not that the Vatican doesn't have a lot of security. They've got so many of those electronic, you know, places that you have to go through. They've got dozens of those. So they're doing their best. But what do you do when 35,000 people, Teresa, are attending papal events?
Right.
And that's the figure they give, like for today. The audience, for the general audience, the participants went well beyond where the obelisk is in the middle of the square. Mm-hmm. And I know the first time that a general audience had people up to and beyond the obelisk, the Vatican gave the figure of at least 30,000. So that's kind of what I'm basing crowds on. And then if there's more, there's more, you know, 35 or 40,000. But it's been awesome. I know a good deal of it is the Jubilee year, all the various events, the particular jubilees that have taken place every single weekend of the year except for all of August. And then obviously people are excited to come and see the first American Pope, and when he gives a shout out in different languages and mentions all the countries whose people speak English, the U.S. obviously always gets a big hand on that.
Yep.
But anyway, it's such an exciting time. But if you do live and work around the Vatican, really within a couple of blocks of St. Peter's Square, life can be very difficult. Oh, well, for examples recently, when they had the King and Queen of Belgium, and then last week, of course, was, you know, King Charles and Camilla.
Right, Camilla,
the whole square is closed off.
Right.
And
they closed down St. Paul outside the walls the whole day because of Charles and Camilla, which I thought, is that really necessary? Can we just give them the morning or the afternoon with all the tourists, all the pilgrims that want to go into those churches?
Yeah, exactly. No, it's sad, and there are days when Via della Conciliazione will be closed, and then at least the left half, if not more, of St. Peter's Square. When I went to film my segment for At Home and Jim, with Jim and Joy on Monday, as I always do, I got across the square. I was filming probably 40 or 50 feet outside of the press office. During the time that I was filming, because of the visit of the royals, Via della Conciliazione was closed. You're going to laugh. Normally, I would walk across the square, and 4 to 5 minutes later, I'm at my home, okay?
Right,
I had to take a taxi home.
I had to.
I know.
The Vatican press office? Are you kidding me?
No, I had to walk several blocks to where I could call a taxi. Get through, and then I had to go home. I mean, it was just ridiculous.
I can identify, because when Deacon Dom and I were there, and I think you knew that because we invited you to come to the baptism of Kelly's grandson, Giorgio, which was so, so nice in St. Peter's. But you were still in the States, I think. And I had to go back to our hotel, and we weren't that far. We were at the Atlantic Star, which is, you know, over by the Borgo. So it's not a big deal. You know how far they had so many things blocked off that it took us like 30 minutes to walk from St. Peter's back to our hotel, just back to the hotel, because some other dignitary was in town. So they had the Via della Conciliazione shut off, closed off. We had to go all the way down by the Tiber, walk around, come back up.
Yeah.
Mamma mia. Even before we started our tour that day, I think we walked like 3 miles. It was just crazy. I mean, it's a mixture of good news and bad news. It's very exciting.
Exactly.
To see so much interest in the church and people wanting to come to see not only the first American Pope, but the Jubilee year and the new saints.
Yeah.
And it's awesome. But at the same time, you have to doubly pack patience now.
Teresa, I don't remember how many other, you know, Jubilees with my work at the Vatican. And then after, you know, now all these years with EWCN, I don't remember a Jubilee where it was So where I would have this kind of a conversation with you. You know,
right.
I couldn't get
True.
Across St. Peter's Square. And, yeah, I mean, if you do have the President of the United States or Russia or something, there are extreme security measures. I get that. But there just have to be different ways to make life easy. If you're a pilgrim, you're only going to go through problems for a couple of days. You won't be thinking of it. But if you
right.
live here and move around, have to cover things in the Vatican, it can be tough. But, again, I look at it, just as you said, as good news, bad news, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So, anyway,
it's very exciting, and especially with the new saints and the new doctor of the church. I know I just interviewed the head of the Cardinal Newman Society yesterday in the second hour of my program, and they are just thrilled.
Pat
He's leaving
Riley,
today for
yeah.
Rome. Pat Riley, he was great. He's all excited. He's going to talk to us again next week as well. But it's
yeah.
really, I just think it's great, and I think it's the attention the church is getting. My prayer is that people who may be just looking at this just from a curiosity perspective, because we have an American pope, that maybe they'll start looking further into the faith, and it'll bring them into or maybe back to the Catholic Church. To me, I always
just
pray that.
People even asking themselves, they could be looking at TV or they could be in Rome and see the crowds, learn that the crowds are here for the Vatican, for the Jubilee, for the Holy Father. And even if they just ask the question, wow, why, what are they drawn to? And if they're mm-hmm. serious enough about the question, they can do some research. And like you said, who knows what that
right.
could lead to, you know.
Absolutely.
So, yeah.
Well, look forward to your coverage and all the great stories you're going to be bringing us. Now, next week, I'm going to be taping a new Saint series, St. Francis, the fact that we have 800 years of his passing next year.
Yeah.
So hopefully maybe you can join Vanessa on another day, maybe Tuesday or Thursday,
well,
if you could join her, that
sure,
would be great.
We'll try to get together for our schedule.
Yeah.
But and next
yep.
week we can talk about the exciting trip that I wish I was going to be at the Pope's side. At the end of the month, he's going to Turkey and Lebanon.
Yep.
And
out of time, my dear, but let's catch up next week and make sure we can get that in there. Goes by so fast. Our very own Joan Lewis, EWTN's Joan's Rome on a Wednesday. We'll be right back. Moving through this month so quickly. Coming up next hour, as I mentioned earlier, there is this brand new report out regarding how Americans, go figure, are very concerned about the safety measures or lack thereof around these horrible abortion pills, and they want more information. It's a new report that was put out by our friends at the wonderful Susan B. Anthony List. Now, we will be tracking them down. I know my wonderful team at EWTN is working on that because I want to dive into this a little bit more deeply. We'll talk about it in 2 cents, so that'll be coming up. It'll give you kind of the overview. There's a lot of detail in this report, so I won't have enough time to go through everything, but it'll give you a general idea of what is the truth regarding these horrible, horrible pills. I don't even want to call them medication because medication is supposed to make people better, and these pills certainly don't. They're part of the culture of death. And then we're going to be chatting with a wonderful priest who started an order known as the Ignatians. It's a new order, and Father Slatterly is going to be a guest of the one, the only Father Mitch Pacwa, and that will be tonight on EWTN Live with Father Mitch. So that's a look at the second hour of the program today on EWTN Radio Extra. Today is October 29th. It's the middle of the week. It's a Wednesday. Can you believe, brothers and sisters, that All Saints Day is coming up already? Pretty soon we'll be in Advent, then Christmas, and then a brand new year. But every day is a gift from God, and we need to get out there and rejoice. And you need to stay tuned for the second hour. Go to EWTN Radio Extra. We'll be right back.
Welcome to Catholic Connection with Teresa Tomeo, keeping you connected to your faith and your world. Teresa tackles the issues of faith and culture, the pro-life message, and media awareness. And now, here's Teresa Tomeo.
It's great to be with you on a Wednesday, October 29th, as we continue our Catholic Connection programming right here on EWTN's Radio Extra. And we have a great lineup in the second hour as well. Coming up after the weather and the news, we'll have an update, of course, on Hurricane Melissa, now moving toward Cuba. And we'll give you those details, a statement from the Holy Father as well regarding those who are struggling after the impact of Melissa in the Caribbean. And then we will move on to our 2 cents segment, T's 2 cents. We're going to be talking about a new report from the Susan B. Anthony List. This is regarding information that people say they want about the abortion pill. Despite what the media and the culture say, shocker, people do not consider these pills safe, and they want more information. So that's a good thing. This is an opportunity for education. And one of the biggest problems, as I say in my book, Extreme Makeover, I have a chapter on the abortion distortion and contraception deception, is that women especially have not been getting the truth about abortion, about contraception, about what this does to them psychologically, physically, all the ills. Even if you take the morale, we would never take the morality out of it as Catholics, because that's central to who we are. But you know what I'm saying? Just the psychological and the physical ramifications, because it's bad. It's bad for you. And, you know, I always love it when we have great teachers who talk about the universal teachings of the church, because the teachings of the Catholic faith are not just for Catholics. They're truth pertaining to the dignity of each human person on this planet. Okay? And that's why when you go against God's plan, the natural law, things go awry. And you see the fallout that you have with abortion, with the abortion pills, with an over-sexualized culture, and on and on and on the gender agenda. So we'll discuss that report from our friends at the Susan B. Anthony Pro-Life America Group. That's coming up at 2 cents. And then I'm excited to welcome into the studio, he is going to be in studio with us for the EWTN second half of Catholic Connection. He is going to be interviewed by Father Mitch tonight live on television. And you can also hear that on radio as well. And he's a young priest. Well, not too young. He's about my age. Like, yeah, he's young. He's about 2 years younger than me. He was born in 1961. I was born in 59. Father Slatterly, who's from Ireland, who began a brand new order known as the Ignatians, is going to be talking to Father Mitch tonight and yours truly about the impact of the modern world and how Catholics view life and how they need to get back to a Catholic view. So there you go. So that's our program for today on a Tuesday. Let's take a look at the weather and see what's happening, because we still have Hurricane Melissa moving around to the Caribbean. So as far as the United States goes, though, let's start there. We have breezy offshore winds and very dry conditions continuing to promote hot temperatures and critical fire weather in coastal Southern California. And they say that is going to be with them through tonight. We have critical fire weather conditions that are forecast also now for much of southern Texas today, with gusty winds and low humidity persisting. And then we have widespread rain showers and gusty winds expected to shift from the Mississippi Valley over to the northeast part of the country. And as we mentioned, we're going to get to the news right now with Melissa is moving away from, of course, Jamaica and onto other areas of the Caribbean. 3 minutes past the hour now. Do hope your Wednesday is going well. It's October 29th, 2025. Let's take a listen and see what's happening in and around the world here on EWTN's Radio Extra. Well, as we mentioned, you can hear it. Hurricane Melissa still strong and moving back into the Caribbean after pummeling the island nation of Jamaica. It was the most powerful hurricane on record to strike that island, landing as a catastrophic Category 5 storm and packing winds of 185 miles per hour. Life-threatening floods, storm surge impacting the island nation now. Jamaican officials say well over 500,000 people at this point, probably more, are without power. The Pope, meanwhile, at his general audience today, offering prayers to those affected by Hurricane Melissa. He said thousands of people have been displaced, while homes, infrastructures, and several hospitals have been damaged. He said, I assure everyone of my closeness, praying for those who have lost their lives, for those who are fleeing, and for those populations who are awaiting the storm's developments and are experiencing hours of anxiety and concern. Speaking of which, that would be the people in Cuba, where Hurricane Melissa is now taking aim. The latest information from the National Hurricane Center showing the monster storm did weaken to at least a Category 3 with a maximum sustained wind of 125 miles an hour. However, it's still dangerous, the experts say, with winds increasing across Cuba as Melissa is looking to make landfall this morning. As much as 20 inches of rain are expected on the eastern part of Cuba, bringing the risk again of catastrophic flash flooding and landslides. In other news this morning, Mark Mayfield tells us House Republicans are asking for the Justice Department to launch an investigation into the use of an auto pen by the Biden administration.
Today, the GOP-led House Oversight Committee said despite past presidents using auto pens, former President Biden was cognitively impaired, and his staff took advantage with a laissez-faire approach. Chair James Comer asked the Department of Health's Board of Medicine to investigate Biden's doctor. The report labeled any action as void if there's no evidence that Biden himself took executive action. The report doesn't name a singular incident that the auto pen was used without Biden's authorization. I'm Mark Nayfield.
A judge in New York ruling that a pro-life group can engage in sidewalk counseling with 15 feet of abortion clinics and not be in violation of an earlier court order. According to the Christian Post, U.S. District Judge Kenneth Karas ruling from the bench earlier this week that Red Rose Rescue could protest or offer counseling in close proximity to abortion facilities, rejecting a previous request by New York's Attorney General Letitia James to ban the pro-life group's activities. The Thomas More Society, helping to represent the organization, releasing a statement yesterday celebrating the bench ruling that allows a pro-life group to demonstrate. The evidence, they say, that we provided in defense of Red Rose Rescue clearly demonstrates that there is no violation of the injunction, including the body cam footage showing that every claim of misconduct made by the Attorney General's two partisan witnesses was false. And a new report highlights which states have laws and policies on the books that are friendliest and most hostile to faith-based nonprofits. The Napa Legal Institute releasing its 2025 Faith and Freedom Index earlier this week. The report ranking each state on a scale of 0 to 100 based on its protections for religious nonprofit organizations. The overall score is based on the freedom score. Senior counsel and Napa Legal Institute Director of Content, Frank DeVito, said the index is a powerful tool for lawmakers to see where they must add protections, strengthen existing ones, or repeal harmful state laws as well. Now, a state's religious freedom score is determined by several factors, he says, including the presence or absence of constitutional protections, whether the state has passed a Religious Freedom Restoration Act, religious freedom conditions for nonprofits with public programming, religious freedom conditions for faith-based employers, protections for religious exercises during a state emergency, and several different amendments. Now, the states that rank lowest in religious freedom were Michigan at 22%, Vermont 23%, Delaware 25%, Washington State 26%, and Maryland at 27%. President Trump says the U.S. is the top country in the world.
Because we should have the lowest interest rates of any country, because without us, there are no other countries, really. I mean, the whole thing falls apart.
Trump speaking at the Asia-Pacific Economic Cooperation CEO Summit in South Korea, saying the economy in the U.S. has improved dramatically since last year. The president touting his administration's efforts to create jobs and also to grow the country at a very, very fast rate. Sorry, I lost my place here. Let me get back up to the... Trump speaking at the Asia-Pacific Economic Cooperation CEO Summit in South Korea. His multi-day trip to Asia will also include a high-stakes sit-down with the Chinese president, where he is expected to push for a new trade deal with China. And the Federal Reserve is widely expected to cut interest rates today. The Fed kicking off its two-day meeting in D.C. yesterday. The group has indicated it will announce a cut following a string of poor labor market reports coupled with news that inflation has slowed. The Fed is expected to approve a second consecutive quarter percentage point for 2025. The Fed's cut has a trickle-down effect on consumers, lowering mortgage, credit card, and auto loan interest rates. Transportation Secretary Sean Duffy visited LaGuardia Airport yesterday. He talked about the impact of the government shutdown, with air traffic controllers missing their first full paycheck. Duffy says this is the beginning of a painful time for the air traffic controllers.
They do really important work for our country, and they need to show up. But I'm not going to lie to anybody to not say that they're not feeling the stress. And this is day one. And day two gets harder. Day three is harder after that as expenses continue to roll.
The controllers are required to work without pay as a government shutdown continues. Controllers have been receiving partial paychecks to this point. Duffy says it remains safe to fly, and if staffing levels drop, it will lead to delays and some possible cancellations. Vice President J.D. Vance is indicating troops will be paid during the government shutdown, at least for now. He told reporters after a Senate Republican policy lunch that over 1 million military service members will get paid at the end of this week, that he continued to blame Democrats for the shutdown. Pentagon officials have identified $8 billion in unspent research, development, and technology funds to redirect to pay for troops. However, some lawmakers have questioned the president's legal authority to redirect the funds. The Treasury Secretary has also warned that unobligated funding could run out by the time the troops are due to receive their November 15th paychecks. And Vice President Vance is also taking part in a Turning Point USA tour down south. He'll be in Oxford, Mississippi today, where he will deliver remarks at the University of Mississippi. Vance was a close friend of the founder of Turning Point USA, Charlie Kirk, who was assassinated at a speaking event in September. Vance will appear alongside Erica Kirk, the late conservative activist wife and the new CEO of Turning Point USA. And a health expert at Cleveland Clinic is emphasizing, as Tammy Trujillo tells us, the negative health impact of too much phone scrolling.
Dr. Adam Borland, a psychologist, says what's known as doom scrolling can fuel stress, anxiety, and even disrupt sleep. He says to avoid this, set screen time limits. He suggests starting with realistic goals and using an alarm to signal when your screen time is up. He says once the alarm goes off, do something more positive for mental health, like going for a walk or doing a hobby. I'm Tammy Trujillo.
A new study shows about 4 in 10 U.S. adults admit to driving while they're drowsy, to the point where they say it can impact their ability to stay safe on the roads. The study was done by the American Academy of Sleep Medicine. AAA estimates about 1 in 6 deadly crashes involve a drowsy driver. Experts also warn that it could be just as dangerous as driving while drinking or driving while intoxicated. Experts say to avoid the risk of driving drowsy, try not to drive for long stretches alone, and pull over and take a nap and switch drivers on long road trips. And finally, in our news segment, it's almost 13 minutes past the hour. Rory O'Neill tells us inconsistent laws, speaking of driving, meant to protect emergency response crews, are confusing drivers out there.
When drivers see emergency vehicles on the side of the road, they're supposed to slow down and move over. A AAA Foundation report finds about a third of drivers ignore the law, and most aren't sure of exactly what their state law says. Penalties range from $30 to $2,500, and enforcement of the slow down and move over law is uneven at best. 46 emergency responders, police, fire, EMT, and tow truck drivers were killed on highways last year. I'm Rory O'Neill.
It is a Wednesday morning. Great to be with you here on the second hour of Catholic Connection on EWTN's Radio Extra. Coming up, we're going to take a look at a new report from Susan B. Anthony Pro-Life America Group regarding the problems with the abortion pill. Americans want more information. Then they want more safety protocols as well. That's very interesting. We shall discuss. And then we'll also take a look at how the worldview of Catholics is not a Catholic worldview and the impact that's having on them. We have a wonderful priest joining us in studio at the bottom of the hour who will also be on EWTN Live tonight with our very own Father Mitch Pacwa. We'll be right back. Of October, almost at the end. 2 more days after today. Can you believe it? It's October 29th, 2025. Great to be with you. Second hour of Catholic Connection Live here on EWTN's Radio Extra. This is such an interesting report. This is a story from the Susan B. Anthony Pro-Life America Group. National survey was done. Americans want safety protocols on abortion pill. Now, if you were just to watch, heaven forbid, the secular media, or listen to leftist politicians who are staunchly pro-abortion, you would think that the abortion pill is the greatest thing since sliced bread. There's no problems. It's part of quote-unquote reproductive health. But you know what? That's not what Americans think. We have brains, thank you very much, and we want information. All right, so according to a Susan B. Anthony Pro-Life America national survey of some 1,600 likely voters, American voters prioritize safety protocols for the abortion pill, listen to this, over accessibility to the drug and other policies connected to chemical abortions. And this study was done very recently, just over the summer in August. Now, the survey found 71% of those questioned approve of requiring a doctor's visit for a woman to obtain the abortion pill. Listen to this. Now, that makes sense, right? you go to get to a doctor to get any other type of serious medication, if you call your doctor's office, they're going to make you come in for an appointment or at least do a video appointment, right? Now, this is a safety rule that the Biden administration removed. So you could just get your prescription without talking to a doctor, except to basically order the pills. 70%, another point, of likely voters surveyed also approved a proposal to require doctors to screen for and report signs of coercion or abuse before prescribing the abortion pill. 71% and 70%. And yet those who are staunchly pro-abortion say none of these rules is necessary. And only 16% of those surveyed believe the abortion pill to be very safe. All right, and here's some more details. By the way, Live Action did a nice job on summarizing this, and that's what I'm reading from this morning. If you're interested, you can go to liveaction.org. The majority of the likely voters, and listen to this, self-identified as pro-choice on abortion, nearly 60%, and 40% self-identified as pro-life. The survey asked if they approved or disapproved of three proposals: requiring FDA drug labels to accurately report the real-world impact of a drug on the patients that take it, requiring a doctor's visit in order for the chemical abortion drug to be prescribed to terminate an unwanted pregnancy, and requiring doctors to screen for and report signs of coercion or abuse before prescribing chemical abortion drugs. 90%, did you hear that? 90% approved of requiring the FDA drug labels to accurately report the real-world impact of a drug on the patients that take it. And some other high numbers, 71% approved of requiring a doctor visit for a woman to obtain the abortion pill. In addition, 70% approved of a proposal to require doctors to screen for and report signs of coercion or abuse before prescribing the abortion pill. Additional questions asked voters to agree or disagree with abortion pill-related statements. 81% agreed with the statement that no one should be able to get chemical abortion drugs online or from a foreign country and be able to give them to a woman without her knowledge or consent. In addition, 69% of those surveyed agreed that it makes sense for the FDA to bring back those safety precautions that were on the abortion pill, including in-person prescriber visits under Presidents Clinton, Bush, Obama, and Trump, before the Biden administration removed them. Voters surveyed also expressed doubt about the safety of the abortion pill. 41% believe the abortion pill to be safe, but only 16% believe it to be very safe. 29% said they don't know if it's safe or not. 30%, nearly a third, believe the abortion pill is unsafe. All right, so why does this matter? In particular, measuring a drug's real-world impact is important because clinical trials frequently exclude for a number of factors or participants that would not be excluded when used in real-world scenarios. As Live Action research fellow Carol Novelli previously reported, some abortion studies have shown low complication rates were constructed in a way that real life would never be. For example, one published study in Nature, which relied on the California Home Abortion by Telehealth study for data, claimed that patients were screened using a publicized standard no-test protocol, primarily relying on patient medical history to assess medical eligibility. The study also claimed a much lower than normal rate of ectopic pregnancies. But upon closer investigation, it becomes clear that something isn't quite right with the study. Buried in the study is the fact that patients who had any risk factors for a symptom of ectopic pregnancy or were potentially beyond the gestational limit of the virtual clinic were referred for pre-abortion ultrasonography. And only after that, 800 or 1600 ordered mail by or went through the pharmacy. So again, this is super, super important to understand how they do this and what they're looking at. And that's why this study is huge. The bottom line, the survey showed that American voters widely support safety protocols on the abortion pill. In light of this information, the Susan B. Anthony List says the FDA should work toward bringing back the safety rules that were removed by the Biden administration, including ensuring women receive the abortion pill from a doctor. I can't even believe I'm reading these words. Ensuring that women receive the abortion pill from a doctor. during an in-office appointment rather than online or through telehealth appointments. The abortion pill has known risks that include incomplete abortion, hemorrhage, infection, and even death. So, of course, these precautions are necessary. But what I find so encouraging, if you go back to the numbers of people and how they identify, when you have 57%, nearly 60%, saying they identify as pro-choice, and that a majority, high numbers, 71%, 70%, 81%, 90% in some of these categories, are agreeing that safety measures are important on this abortion pill, that shows me that maybe the attitude out there is changing. And again, the key takeaways, 71% of those surveyed approve of requiring a doctor's visit for a woman to obtain the abortion pill. Again, a safety rule the Biden administration removed. 70% of likely voters surveyed also approved a proposal to require doctors to screen for and report signs of coercion or abuse before prescribing the pill. Now, what's so crucial about this is that we know, if you look at the studies, a vast majority of women, well over 60%, say that they were pressured to have an abortion. They didn't go jumping and skipping and smiling as they waltzed into the abortion mill, okay? They were pressured by a spouse, by a parent, by someone in their life to have that abortion. It was against their will. Only 60% of those surveyed believe the abortion pill to be very safe. Why are we even in this situation is what I want to know. In the 21st century, you would think that it would be common sense to get such a serious pill. I don't want to call it medication. I hate to use that word. Let's say prescription. Any other type of prescription. I don't care if it's a water pill. You have to go see your doctor, right? And you have to have a good reason as to why you need this particular type of medication. And yet, when it comes to something that is so risky and can be so dangerous to the point of death, the rules are removed by politicians who only have one thing in mind, and that's supporting the abortion industry and getting more money into Planned Parenthood and their own bank accounts. It is absolutely criminal what they've done here. But thanks be to God, Americans, I think, and this is a sign of that, this national survey, are waking up to the truth about abortion. So for more information, you can go to sbaprolife.org, sbaprolife.org, and there's all kinds of details regarding this national survey. Voters overwhelmingly put patient safety first and want transparency to protect women. Thanks be to God. We'll be right back. October 29th, second hour of EWTN's Catholic Connection here on EWTN Radio Extra, and so excited to have a very dynamic priest in studio with us this morning. He's going to be on Father Mitch's program, EWTN Live, tonight, and we're talking about his amazing book, Enchanted by Eternity, Recapturing the Wonder of the Catholic Worldview. My guest, Father William Slattery, who is the founder of the Ignatians. Hey, Father, thanks for joining us live. Appreciate it.
My pleasure, Teresa. My pleasure indeed.
All right, so tell us about this book, because I love this concept of understanding why it's so important to have a Catholic worldview.
Well, it is super important, Teresa, because right now the worldview that we all have, and that includes the vast majority of Catholics, isn't helping us to live, to experience life to the full. The pandemic levels of stress, the suicide levels, even among kids 10 to 14, suicide is the second largest killer in that age group in the United States. The inability to sleep, a good night's sleep of so many people, stress levels at work, inability to focus, and countless other phenomena all indicate that something has gone wrong with the way we experience reality and with our ability to live life in a way that was far more exciting and meaningful for past generations. Mm-hmm. So if things go wrong, it's because we're not seeing reality and interacting with reality the way we should be. So that is a matter of worldview. Worldview is like the glasses through which you see reality. Mm-hmm. You don't think about worldview. You simply look through this worldview and interpret everything according to it.
What I find, though, so fascinating, and this is, I'm just telling you a little bit of my own story, because when my husband and I were both reverts, and he's now a deacon in the church, he's been a deacon for 13 years, and we had our reversion, Father. We basically are self-taught Catholics. I did have a really, really good Catholic education in grade school, but the world pulled me away very quickly once I graduated grade school back in the early 70s. But when we made a decision to heal our marriage and come back into the church, we made a commitment to also study the faith and get more involved. And we really began to read, and everything made sense. So, for example, in my last segment, I was just talking about this new survey that's out from the Susan B. Anthony Pro-Life America group, where they're looking at the horrible impact of the abortion pill and how more people want to learn about safety protocols, if you could ever have safety protocols, you know, connected with an abortion pill. But what is so, I think, important is if we're thinking at this from a Catholic worldview, what does the Catholic Church tell us about abortion? What does the Catholic Church tell us about contraception? And as you said, being the happiest is when you understand that the Catholic worldview, it's universal. It's not just for Catholics, these beautiful teachings. And to me, maybe I'm wrong, but that's what it means to have a Catholic worldview, to always look at, okay, what is the church saying about this and why?
Exactly, Teresa. Exactly. But there is one part of church teaching that is more important than all the others. And that is our future, your future, every person's future. And when I say future, I mean the forever future, mm-hmm. the future in eternity. Because you see, as we visualize, as we imagine, as we feel our future in our guts, we think about the world we live in right now according to that vision. Mm-hmm. Now, in the present worldview, we conceive of the entire universe as a vast machine that was created by an industrial manufacturer like God, who banged out the Big Bang and then pretty much more or less departed from the scene. So we Catholics, in spite of the fact that the Church gives us another vision of God, We have pretty much adopted this cold picture of God and mm-hmm. this picture of a universe that is essentially functioning like a machine, and that the end outcome for us is simply to escape from this world at the hour of death and be saved by entering heaven. But this is where the crunch comes. Our vision of heaven is massively, massively non-Catholic. We simply imagine heaven as this absolutely super boring cosmic retirement home. And as a result, we're not excited about it. And as a result, our excitement about the rest of the Catholic faith also is somewhat numbed. Does this make sense?
No, it makes sense, but I'm thinking in terms of eternity. If we embrace the Catholic teachings, that's going to help us get to the right place in terms of heaven and be enchanted by eternity, right?
Yes, but to get there, and to get there in the way God wants us to get there, we've got to be excited about it. It has to provoke excitement in us. But 99.9% of Catholics today are not excited about heaven, because they review it simply as the place where you're in a retirement home that's going to go on forever, and where the only exciting thing is that you play a musical instrument, the harp that you never learned in the first place. And where the entire
atmosphere... What about the tambourine? I've always wanted to play the tambourine. My patron, St. Teresa of Avila, played the tambourine. So I want to play the tambourine. Can I play that in heaven?
Well, as we will see in a moment, most certainly. Most certainly. You see, the what we have done with heaven has been a massive fiasco of PR. We have given heaven an absolutely horrifying description of being this place of a static status quo that will go on forever and ever. It will be, we imagine it as some sort of lifeless life that that is going to be super boring and in which there is no action, no creativity, nothing changing, and that goes on forever. So many people are secretly, many Catholics are secretly in fear of heaven even. And as a result, when, as you think about the end goal of your life, the end purpose of your life, which is heaven, as you think about that, so you evaluate everything that is to be used as means to achieving that.
Mm-hmm. Amen. We're talking with Father William J. Slattery. His book, From Our Sunday Visitor, was released earlier this year. It's entitled Enchanted by Eternity, Recapturing the Wonder of the Catholic Worldview. And by the way, the foreword was written by Catholic actor and businessman Mark Wahlberg. We'll talk about that as well when we come back with Father. Father is also going to be on EWTN Live with Father Mitch tonight. Again, the book is Enchanted by Eternity, Recapturing the Wonder of the Catholic Worldview. I really like this idea, Father. I want to talk to you more about the big picture when we come back and how we can recapture it, because you're talking about recapturing the wonder of the Catholic worldview. How do we do that? That's the big question, the $50,000 question we'll address when we come back. It is a Wednesday, hour number two of Catholic Connection. We'll be right back. Actually 39 minutes now. Clock just changed. It is a Wednesday. It's October 29th, 2025. Thanks for tuning in to hour number two of Catholic Connection with yours truly, Teresa Tomeo, on EWTN's Radio Extra. A joy and very helpful, enlightening, and informative to have Father William J. Slattery in studio with us this morning. He'll also be on with Father Mitch tonight, of course, on EWTN Live. We're talking about his recent book, most recent book, published by Our Sunday Visitor. It's entitled Enchanted by Eternity, Recapturing the Wonder of the Catholic Worldview. Father, what is the difference between what you mentioned prior to our first break, how Catholics view eternity, unfortunately, and what the Catholic Church really tells us eternity will be like? So what's a Catholic heaven? Can you kind of describe that for us?
Well, normally we think of the journey that God intends for us is that from earth through the gateway of death to heaven, perhaps with a stopover in purgatory, and then in heaven, in this spiritual heaven, super spiritual heaven, that's the end. But in actual fact, it's not the end. In the biblical worldview, in the Bible, heaven is the stopover. Because at the end of history, with Christ's second coming, heaven and earth are going to amalgamate, so to speak. The entire universe is going to become a renewed universe, and this world is going to be made sublimely new. But it won't be a new world, but a renewed world. In other words, everything that we experience that is beautiful in this life right now is going to be present in the forever reality of heaven that we will experience, God willing.
So how have we gotten so far away from that, do you think, Father? What's happened?
Well, there are many complex reasons, but one of them is this. From the 17th century, we began to separate the spiritual and the material. And we began to think of, in spirituality, that all that mattered was being spiritual, and that all that mattered was our soul. But in the Bible, it's body that matters. I mean, first of all, that's the meaning of the incarnation, mm-hmm. that the second person of the Trinity became man with a human body. Christmas, Easter Sunday, it's all about body. It's all about body. And the whole purpose of the resurrection is not about the immortality of the soul. It's not to teach us we're going to live as immortal spirits, as some type of ghosts for all eternity. It's to tell us the amazing, stunning, heart-stopping truth that we are going to be alive forever with a real body that makes our body now look like that of a ghost.
So where do we, how do we direct Catholics to, in addition to your book, what resources, where should we go to learn more about what the Church teaches us about eternity?
First of all, the Catechism of the Catholic Church, paragraphs 1042 to 1050, sets out the basic truths to be revealed about heaven in a synthetic form. But then the entire Bible, as I explain in pretty much most of my book, gives the clear message that because we are going to have a resurrected, ever so concrete, ever so physical body, like that of the resurrected Jesus, that body requires a physical environment. Now, the entire message of the Bible, as the great biblical theologians have been stating with ever-increasing emphasis in the past 100 years, is a message that the world matters to God. For example, in the book of Genesis, the whole meaning of the creation of the universe in 7 days is the following. What Jewish people would have heard when they heard that God created the world in 7 days was the following. In Hebrew, to swear an oath, the Hebrew word is sheba. But sheba comes from the word for seven, shaba. Therefore, when the Jewish mind heard about this creation by God of the universe, what it heard was this, that God was swearing an oath. He was sevening himself to be faithful to the universe and to everything in it, come what may. That he would never walk out on this universe, that he intends to bring it to fulfillment. And that is actually the meaning of the seventh day, the Sabbath. It is when God actually enters into his world and takes up his residence within it. And then in the final book of the Bible, the book of Revelation, we see in synthesis all of the biblical passages about the fulfillment of the world and of everything in it being told us as now accomplished through the work of Jesus in the cross, on the cross and in his resurrection.
We're talking with Father William J. Slattery, who is a PhD in philosophy, and he has a book that's published by Our Sunday Visitor, a fantastic book, Enchanted by Eternity, Recapturing the Wonder of the Catholic World View. He'll be on with Father Mitch tonight, of course, on Father Mitch's program, EWTN Live, a big picture look at Catholicism for people living right now in the 21st century. So, Father, you have quite an extensive educational background. You have a doctorate in philosophy, as I mentioned. You work in the Diocese of Columbus. You speak. You teach. How did you get so interested? I mean, there's so much. The Catholic Church is so deep, and there's so many things to discuss and to learn about the saints and the teachings. How did you get so interested in eternity?
Well, I love nature. I was born in a rather remarkably beautiful little island called Ireland. And I often would gaze on beautiful sunsets in the Irish hills, and I would be in absolute amazement at the beauty of it all. But then a sadness would come over to me. It would come over me because I would think to myself, one day I'm going to be separated from all this. This is what is going to happen at death. And it created a sort of an existential sadness inside me. Until after careful study of the Bible, I realized that I will never be separated from everything that is beautiful in nature, in sunrises, sunsets, ocean waves. Everything that is truly beautiful in nature is going to be preserved by God forever on the renewed planet Earth, what the Bible calls the new heavens and the new earth. And that changes everything. Then you suddenly realize the value of everything in this world. Then you become more intense about the value of the human body and of every human body, and therefore of the unborn bodies. Then you become more intense about building an ecological civilization. Then you become more intense about creating beauty all around you, whether in music, art, literature, or simply, the most extraordinary of ways, as a mother or as a father, taking care in the building up of beautiful children. Everything worldly becomes the preparation for your forever future in heaven, because heaven is going to be on earth.
How do we get people to understand this? So, I mean, obviously your book is a great resource, but what about in the churches, in the schools, in the Catholic schools? How do we get people to understand this true interpretation of what our church gives us regarding heaven?
Well, first of all, it presents something of a challenge, because you can't just read the Bible itself and expect to understand this immediately. You see, the Bible was not written to us. It was written for us, but it was written to the Jewish people of 2,000 years ago, 3,000 years ago. And therefore, one has to understand that just as you have to learn how to read Shakespeare, who existed only 500 years ago, you have to learn a great deal how to understand the Bible that was written 3,000 years ago. So that is why a good place to start is, as embarrassing as it is for me to have to say, so a good place to start off is with my own book, which synthesizes the greatest findings of the great biblical theologians in the past 100 years about this and combines them with all that the church teaches. Once you have this big picture in place that we are going to be living forever on a renewed earth, then you begin to become excited, because you feel that everything about you, all of your humanness, actually has purpose. That our body isn't just a piece of meat that is attached to our brain, to our soul, of little value, but it has incredible value, and it's going to be forever. A transformed body, a resurrected body, like the body of Jesus. And that makes all the difference. Then you become excited about heaven, and you become far more determined that you are going to make all the sacrifices necessary in order to get to heaven. But it also means that we also become incredibly earthy, because we realize that this earth has got value. We become world changers, and that is the mission of Catholics. We are meant to be world changers. We are meant to be builders of a civilization of beauty in which all human beings can flourish. And that is what Catholics did once upon a time. We built a civilization. It was called Christendom. It wasn't perfect, but it was, according to the opinions of many contemporary Jewish, atheist, agnostic intellectuals, it was an awesomely beautiful civilization. One of the most stunning statistics that they have found about this Catholic civilization is the level of suicide, the suicide rates. The suicide rates were almost at zero level. Now, think about that. With the level of medicine back at that time, with the physical pain they endured, with the poverty and so on and so forth, and yet They loved life. These intellectuals whom I researched, they simply concluded, well, for some weird reason, those Christians back then were satisfied with life because of their strange worldview.
Wow. So, Father, I know we have this beautiful book, and you're going to be discussing this with Father Mitch Pacwa, Enchanted by Eternity, but where can we find you online? You're doing a lot online as well, correct?
Yes, I will be starting off January the 1st. I'll be starting off a YouTube channel called Wildly Alive Catholic.
Hmm.
And then three daily podcasts on Apple and Spotify. One is entitled Verse Unlocked. Verse Unlocked will be a five-minute explanation of a biblical verse. The second podcast will be Rosary Reset, five-minute heart rewire. Something about the Rosary, about Our Lady. And the third will be the Catholic OS, the Catholic Operating System.
Wow.
The big picture of Catholicism in 5 minutes again.
There you go. Great stuff, Father. Thank you so much. Look forward to your program with Father Mitch Pacwa. The book is Enchanted by Eternity by our guest, Father Slatterly, and it's published by Our Sunday Visitor. We'll be right back. Discussion with Father William Slatterly. He'll be on with Father Mitch tonight on EWTN Live, and I'm excited about this book, Enchanted by Eternity. Now, there is so much to our Catholic faith, and I don't even think we've even begun, even with everything we do here, even with everything at the Vatican. I don't know. It's just the more every day I just find out something else about our faith that is just so incredible. So never stop learning. We've been talking a lot about education, of course, these past few days, because we're in the middle of the Jubilee on Education. And, of course, we have John Henry Newman, who's going to become a Doctor of the Church in the Cardinal Newman Society, as we mentioned yesterday. So all kinds of great stuff. So, again, the book, Enchanted by Eternity. And Father William is going to be back with us, God willing, maybe by the end of the year, because, as he mentioned, in early January, he's starting all these different podcasts, and he's doing a lot of outreach to young people. And so he was asking me if he could come, if I could announce it. And I said, well, better yet, come back on the program and we'll talk about it. So hopefully we can get him scheduled soon. All righty then, coming up tomorrow, Father Mitch Pacwa will be joining us. We're going to be taking a look at John Henry Newman becoming a Doctor of the Church. What does it mean to become a Doctor of the Church? What is that all about anyway? Okay, how does the Church make those decisions? Of course, Father Mitch will have the answers. And then we are also going to be taking a look at some other things tomorrow, including your Eucharistic identity with Father Gregory Pine. I love that. That'll be awesome. Have a great Wednesday. God willing, talk to you tomorrow as we are winding down the month of October on October 30th. Talk to you on a Thursday. Ciao, ciao.